Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
And we are back. Thank you for joining us for yet another episode of the Startup Hustle podcast. I'm your host, Lauren Conaway, founder and CEO of Innovate Her KC. And I would be very, very out of turn if I didn't tell you that today's episode of Startup Hustle is sponsored by Wix. Yes, our friends over at Wix, they know a thing or two about turning a scrappy startup into a global organization that serves millions of people. They have a lot of experience doing that. And they want to share what they've learned with Startup Hustle listeners in their new micro podcast series called Ready for Takeoff by Wix. When you tune into Ready for Takeoff by Wix, you get to hear from Wix founders and company leaders. They are going to share super short, easily digestible lessons to help you build better programs and teams faster. That is definitely a topic that we at Startup Hustle can get behind, and we are very, very grateful. I can't wait to check out Ready for Takeoff by Wix, and we suggest that you subscribe and follow wherever you listen to this show. Now, let's talk about the issue at hand. We have with us today an amazing guest for you. And I think I definitely have to share something that we're super excited about. But we want to congratulate this next guest for being recognized as a top startup in San Diego by Startup Hustle. You probably know by now that Startup Hustle, we love to go from city to city and find startups that are doing really, really exciting things. And today's guest is no exception. We have with us today Tosh Dutt, and he is the CEO and co-founder of ChargeNet Stations. So if you are ready to talk about renewable energy and you're ready to talk about waves of the future, you've come to the right place, my friends. But Tosh has also come to the right place. Tosh, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Lauren. It's really a pleasure to be here.
I'm so glad. And I do have to tell you, friends, for those of you playing at home, you know, we do pre-show prep. I think you all know that by now. We kind of talk to the guests and, you know, tell this is how it's going to go. And Tosha, he's such a nice guy. Like, you have the best smile. You can't see this, folks, because I know this is audio only, but he has a really great smile and he's just such a cool dude doing cool stuff. So I really am super psyched to have this conversation.
If you saw me on video, I don't know how cool I look because I have like an airplane neck pillow around my neck because I have a pinched nerve in my neck right now.
Hey, you know what? Far be it from us to judge entrepreneurs for, you know, bringing in resources to help them get the job done. I am sorry about your pinched nerve, though.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
That's a bummer, but what is not a bummer is going to be this conversation. And so I'm gonna go ahead and kick it off, and I'm just gonna ask you, you know, tell us about your journey, tell us about yourself, tell us about ChargeNet Stations. We want to hear it for sure.
Yeah, no, thanks, and thanks again for having me here. You know, I started kind of my clean tech journey about 12 years ago. Of all the places in Hawaii, And, you know, over the past 12 years, I've gotten to get a really great broad perspective of different parts of the energy business, having worked with utilities, with infrastructure developers like Johnson Controls and Honeywell. And then, you know, more recently, over the past 6 years, has been really focused on energy storage and, you know, software that controls and optimizes energy storage. And then also looking at it from the finance perspective, and along with the real estate perspective as well. You know, I got to represent some large commercial real estate property owners and, you know, show them the path to integrate more renewables and also, you know, EV charging infrastructure as it's starting to get more relevant into their portfolios. So that, you know, that really kind of gave me the broad perspective that I needed when it came time to figure out, you know, what is ChargeNet or what can ChargeNet solve? I guess the solution came first before ChargeNet, but it gave me the framework to go and investigate and to take the time to, you know, ask other subject matter experts and leaders in the industry if, you know, the ideas that I had were valid or they were gonna, or if they had a, you know, relevance or place in, you know, in this electrified, you know, future that we're trying to create for ourselves as a society. So, you know, a little under 2.5 years ago, I started ChargeNet Stations, and I'd already had some ideas in my mind about, you know, who I wanted to do this with. And one of my co-founders, Rebecca Wolkoff, who's our chief technology officer, her and I worked at sort of late stage startup called Demand Energy Networks, which had gotten acquired by Enel, which is a large Italian multinational utility. And you know, the work that she was doing really intrigued me, and I took a footnote and I told myself if I ever start a company or, you know, venture out on my own, that that, you know, she's the person that I'm gonna want to do this with. And so that opportunity came, and it came as a result of some other acquisitions that the company that we both, Rebecca and I, were with that had gotten acquired had made. One of them being eMotorWorks, which is an EV charging company, and another one, Demand Energy, Enernoc, which is a large energy service provider. And that really kind of made me think about, well, what if you kind of combined all these technologies together? What, you know, what would it look like? And where would it be relevant from, you know, from being able to really make an impact relative to climate change? I mean, the technologies that we're working with, solar, batteries, fast chargers, all have, you know, really strong opportunities to displace greenhouse gases. And so, you know, what are some unique ways that we can capitalize on that and, you know, and take a deeper cuts to, you know, to climate change that way.
Sure.
So, you know, that really kind of got me going, and yeah, and so here we are 2.5 years later.
Here we are. Yeah. Well, and we're definitely going to talk about ChargeNet Stations, and we're going to talk about that environmental impact piece. But I'm going to back up the truck a little bit, and I want to talk about Tosh. I do. Are you ready? We're going to get a little personal here.
All right, let's do it.
And so I want to know, you know, outside of career and things that you've done in the past, like what drives you around this cause? What inspired you to get involved?
I think what inspired me was really when, you know, like most parents, when you become a parent, you start to think about the world that your kids are going to live in, and you start to think about, you know, what you're doing and whether that's going to have any effect on them. And that was really the, you know, the view that I took. I mean, and also, you know, I was pretty fortunate to be in a very sort of a natural resource rich environment. You know, when I'd started in my clean tech journey, I started it in Hawaii, and it was because I'd I'd met my now wife in Hawaii, and we decided to start a family. And then, you know, and we started our family in LA and then decided to move back to Hawaii. You really start to look at, you know, that the natural resources that we have and, you know, the sort of impact that we have. And, you know, in an environment, you know, in a state where, you know, that's, you know, it's so rich and having to preserve it is so important. You become very acutely aware of, you know, what is your carbon footprint, or, you know, what, sure, what effect is, you know, what you're eating having on the environment. So, you know, it was this process of awareness, you know, uncovering, you know, discovering and then discarding, you know, old ideas that I had about, you know, even personally, like my diet, and, you know, that certain decisions I make around, you know, which products I use. You know, it really kind of opened my eyes. And, you know, as my kids got older, they became very, you know, aware as well. And, you know, yeah, they feel the impact. So, you know, I get to get live feedback on, you know, their environments and the things that they're seeing, and, you know, the causes that they care about as well.
Yeah. Well, and I love that you kind of drew it back to, you know, the not just your family, but your immediate environment as well. I mean, if you're surrounded by so much natural beauty, you're going to do everything you can to sustain it and to protect it. And I love that. But you've taken kind of an interesting path. You know, I understand that you studied biomedical engineering. And I got to tell you that clean energy tech, that's a little bit of a leap. So how did that happen?
Well, there really isn't much of a, you know, biotech or even a tech industry in Hawaii. And that's kind of the you know, why that change happened. And, you know, having a technical background and you know, having worked in the semiconductor industry for a bit, you know, it was a welcome change for me. And it was a bit scary too, because, you know, here I am, you know, and while, you know, I'm amongst family that my wife has in Hawaii, and, you know, we have a you know, family and friends there, you know, going into sort of a new corporate environment and a new culture was a bit frightening. But, you know, there's some really great people that I got to work with, both you know, in the startup world in Hawaii, and also at the utilities with One Electric and you know, other utilities in Hawaii. And you know, everybody really cared about, you know, the mission and kind of the objectives and the goals that were set. And, you know, as you know, Hawaii is really proactive in setting their, you know, zero net energy goals ahead of everyone else. And, you know, they've done a lot of great work to achieve that. And it feels good to know that, you know, in some small way, I've been a part of that.
Yeah. We're gonna drill down on that in just a second, but you said something that was really interesting to me. And so we're going to drill down on that now. You know, one of the things that I think that is kind of pervasive to the entrepreneurial experience is fear. You know, and you said that there was some fear around jumping into a new industry. And so I'm really curious to hear a little bit more about that, because I feel like every entrepreneur has that moment where they are so deeply uncomfortable with the space that they have found themselves in. You know, mm-hmm. It's not easy to start a business. It's not easy to start to do something new. And so I'm really curious, you know, you said that you had some really great people who helped you along the way, but how did you, Tosh, personally deal with that fear and keep on keeping on in the face of it?
Yeah, that's a really interesting and a very dynamic question, as simple as it is. You know, there's the fear that you're not going to succeed. You know, a lot of entrepreneurs, myself included, you know, we generally, our first position is standing in our own way. And then something has to happen for us to get out of our own way in order to proceed. And so for me, what it was is, like I'd shared, like, it was this process of uncovering, discovering, you know, new ideas, and then discarding the, you know, the old ideas that didn't work, to be able to, you know, have that, have the, I guess, the audacity to get out of my own way and take the first step. You know, the things that really motivated me to do that were, you know, I really wasn't getting where I wanted to go in the corporate world. And, you know, I knew that there was something different that I think I knew that there was something more that I could offer. But, you know, the corporate world is set up to favor, you know, specific people. And I didn't fit into those categories. And so, so, you know, it's being able to understand that, like, wait, there is another path here, and that, that unless you take the first step, you know, you're going to be in the same position that you're always going to be in. So, you know, it was a struggle. It was a struggle going from opportunity, you know, going from role to role for a bit. But what's interesting was, like, each role that I moved to had relevance relative to what I'm doing now. So it was almost like, yeah. I was like, you know, and it's all how you perceive it, right? And
yeah.
You know, what lens you look through, and what you take out of it. But for me, this is my education. I mean, this,
yeah,
the things that I went through over the past 12 years and the struggles that I went through led me to be where I'm at right now, and to have the fortitude and to have the mental capacity to be able to do it, and to be able to stay focused and stay focused on my vision and not compromise on my goals.
Yeah. Well, and it seems like every step that you have taken on your path has in fact been preparing you for where you are now. And I love that. I think that our journey is, you know, we have so many opportunities to take what we need, leave the rest, but then grow and evolve as leaders and as founders and as entrepreneurs. And so it's really, really awesome to hear that you kind of availed yourself of that life experience. And it just speaks very well to you as an individual. So congratulations on that.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and now I'm curious, you know, I'd like to kind of set the stage a little bit for our listeners before we kind of do more of a deep dive into ChargeNet stations. But I have a stat here, and I'm going to go ahead and read it. Here it comes. In over a year, just one electric car on the roads can save an average 1.5 million grams of CO2. And for those of you who have a difficult time kind of wrapping your mind around it, that is the equivalent of 4 return flights from London to Barcelona. So some pretty deep impact, right, Tosh?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, definitely.
When we're talking about kind of setting the stage for this transition to electric vehicles, you know, there are currently 2.32 million legal plug-in EVs in the U.S. Mm-hmm. I question, what are you seeing in this transition to electric vehicles? Like, what does the landscape look like today?
I think the transition to electric vehicles is happening a lot faster than people had thought. And it kind of just kind of crept up on us. And what's happening is that there's far more demand than there's supply. And then you also have supply chain issues that are kind of protracting that.
Sure.
But, you know, with oil and gas prices being so high too, it's pushing people further towards EVs. And what's happening is industries having to catch up. So, you know, it's a good problem to have, but at the same time, you know, at the rate at which people are adopting EVs is nowhere near the same rate at which we're building, you know, EV charging stations to support that.
Yeah.
And that's really what the biggest problem is. Like right now, there's only 77 fast chargers for every EV in California, which is the, you know, the state with the largest EV adoption. So, you know, there's some gaps that need to get filled, and there's some really exciting opportunities that I think we as an industry, you know, and my peers in the EV charging infrastructure industry have to be able to support that.
Yeah. Well, and on the consumer side, you know, I feel like the adoption rate has been really interesting because I remember when electric vehicles first came out and it seemed like they were this new, you know, shiny thing. Some people were really excited about them. There were people who were very concerned, you know, like natural gas proponents and, you know, things like, and so it's been really interesting to watch the adoption rate sort of scale as the technology has improved and as the market saturation has become more evident. What have been some of the stumbling blocks for the industry as a whole?
I think having sort of clarity around charging, you know, charging rates, how people can charge. You know, there have been, you know, I've heard quite a few instances of, you know, people buying EVs because they're fed up with, you know, the amount of gas that they're having to pay, not realizing that they have to pay for the EV charging. And that's, it is going to cost them some money, not as much as it's going to cost gas.
Sure.
But then not really kind of not knowing how to charge and, you know, not really having a positive experience. So I think, you know, there's some companies out there that are starting to educate consumers prior to, you know, if they are looking for an EV purchase or even if they're not, and, you know, educating people on like, hey, this is how electrified transportation works. And this is how charging works. These are different types of charging. This is about how much it costs and how long it takes to charge. So, you know, it's, I think it's education. And then again, you know, it's lack of infrastructure and, you know, sort of the current infrastructure not being placed in areas that are really sort of intuitive people intuitive for people to go to,
right,
or accessible, or, you know, or reliable or transparent when it comes to, you know, the charging. So, you know, what people are paying for charging. So, you know, those are all opportunities that are available for us to fix.
Well, and yeah, I was going to note that infrastructure piece, that seems to be a large bit of the problem that ChargeNet stations has been tasked with solving. And so, but before we delve deeply into that, because that's coming up next, I do want to just mention, well, actually I have a question for you, Tosh. Here it comes. Have you ever heard of Wix? Have you ever used Wix through the course of your business?
Wix is awesome. I've seen some really amazing websites on Wix, and it's really impressive.
I know. I wholeheartedly agree. Like, I've used Wix. I love it. I love to use it. It's so easy. I am not a developer, and using Wix to build websites, they just make it so, so easy. You know, one of the things that Wix has a lot of experience at is building a global company. They've done so, and they've done so very, very well. They have a highly recognizable brand, and they have a product that people are clamoring for. So the next step in their progression, and I'm super excited about this, our friends over at Wix, they know about turning startup teams into global organizations. They serve millions of people throughout their business, and they want to share what they've learned with new audiences. They have developed this new micro podcast series called Ready for Takeoff by Wix. And the company founders and leaders, they're going to share these really short lessons. I love micro podcast as a concept, because I think that, you know, not everybody necessarily has time to sit down and listen to a podcast for an hour, you know, so finding ways to take in knowledge quickly is awesome. But these super short lessons are designed to help you build better products, build better teams, to do your business better and do it faster. You can subscribe and follow Ready for Takeoff by Wix right now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to this show. And we suggest that you do that. Now, folks, we are here with Tosh Dutt. He is CEO and co-founder of ChargeNet Stations. And thus far, we've talked a little bit about Tosh. We've talked about kind of the landscape of sustainability and electric vehicles. But now I want to drill down on purpose. And so I want to talk to you specifically about ChargeNet Stations as a as an entity. What do you do?
So I'll kind of start with our mission, and our mission is to displace as many greenhouse gases from all the major contributors to climate change as much as we can, as fast as we can. And what that means is not just greenhouse gases from internal combustion engines or fossil fuel generation, but also a high carbon intensive food supply. And so what we do is we partner with quick serve restaurant franchisees and their brands, and we turn their underutilized parking lots on their freestanding pads into ultra fast electric vehicle charging stations with energy storage and solar where it makes sense to do it. And our software platform is able to integrate all those technologies together and use data that we collect from our white label front end app that integrates both the EV charging and food point of sale to provide more accurate predictions on how EV drivers will use that station or how we should use our other technologies like solar and battery storage. And so that's what we do. And we do this all at no cost to our partners, the franchisees that we work with.
That's incredible. So I'm going to tell, it's not really a story, I guess, a vignette. One of the things, so we have here in Kansas City, which is where we Startup Hustle is headquartered, we are right in the backyard of the Kauffman Foundation. And if you are an entrepreneur, you have probably heard about the Kauffman Foundation. They do incredible work supporting entrepreneurs and, you know, worldwide. They are a multi-billion dollar foundation. They have charging stations in their parking lot. And I think that's super cool. I'm very excited. However, I would say that I have had the thought, you know, periodically, I'm like, the average layperson not going to go and hang out in the Kauffman Foundation's parking lot. You know, they just, they don't have the occasion to go. And so, you know, I think that Kauffman has done this really, really awesome thing to make this available. But the fact is, you know, I love the fact that you even said it, you know, people aren't necessarily intuitively going to go to some of the places where some of these charging stations are located. But you've chosen to focus on fast food chains. You know, I think I read somewhere ChargeNet stations are now at 70 Taco Bell restaurants, which, by the way, well done. Round of applause.
Well, hold your horses there yet. And we're in the process of building them, and those will be available by the end of this year. So
that's incredible.
Thanks. Yeah, I just want to make sure I'm presenting the right info.
Sure. All right. The plan is to have ChargeNet stations at 70 Taco Bell restaurants. Okay. My question is, you know, why are you focusing on fast food chains? Why not gas stations or malls or, you know, other types of businesses?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. One that I get all the time. So, you know, if you want to meet people where they're at, go to where they're going to be. So, you know, 40% of the U.S. population eats at least one fast food meal a day. So it's 120 million people a day that are going to, you know, sitting in a car in a drive-through in a parking lot, eating food from quick serve restaurants. And, you know, and for us, it's woven into the DNA of our culture. It's convenient. It's fast. And, you know, contrary to popular belief, a lot of people that think that, you know, sort of like, you know, more low income people eat quick serve at quick serve restaurants because of the price point. That's actually not true. The median income of someone that eats at quick serve restaurants is $104,000 a year. So it's really kind of spreads across everyone in every demographic, irrespective of, you know, all the other sort of, you know, buckets that we want to silo people into. And the other thing too is, you know, kind of relative to the question of, well, why not gas stations? Well, you know, the time it takes to fill up gas doesn't align with the time it takes to fill up, you know, the time it takes to charge your car significantly enough to be able to, you know, for it to be useful. And that's not going to happen until battery technology and, you know, other technologies, you know, advance to the point where you can get that. But what you can do is line up the time it takes to eat a meal with the time it takes to get enough charge to get on with the rest of your day. So like this year, you know, we can get people, you know, at least 100 miles in 50 minutes for about, you know, 10, 15 bucks so that they can get on with the rest of their day. And next year, that'll be faster. That'll be double that in 10 minutes. So, you know, the idea is that, you know, with the people that are going to be that are now starting to adopt EVs, you know, with there being a $30,000 less price point, you know, like with the Chevy Bolt, we're going to start seeing more of those, and it's going to really open up the EV market to a lot more people, especially since the business model of owning an EV and sort of the total cost of ownership is a lot different than an internal combustion engine vehicle. So right. it allows that access a lot better. And that's why we're focused in that space.
Okay. Well, I love it. Hey, this is actually just for my personal interest, because I'm very curious. On average, about how long does it take to charge an EV?
Right now it depends on where you go and how fast the chargers are. But on average, you know, it takes roughly 15, 20 minutes to get, from like 20% to 60%.
Okay. I had no idea. You just gave me a frame of reference. I love it. And talk to us a little bit more about like the tactics of introducing these charging stations, at locations. You know, what's involved in putting them up?
Well, it's, you know, these are infrastructure projects, and you know, our partners that are franchisees that we work with, you know, we plan out ahead, and we look at, you know, their development schedules, and we plan construction, you know, strategically to meet you know, specific schedules that they have to meet as well. So, you know, it's a collaborative process, and, you know, it takes about 3 weeks of construction from the time you get your permit and you first start digging. You know, it's a very collaborative process that we take. And the reason why it's collaborative is, you know, our solution is entirely white labeled. So, you know, the partners that we work with, like Taco Bell and others, you know, we're working with them on, you know, white labeling the entire solution for them.
That's awesome. And you said that there's no cost to the franchisee?
No, we work with, you know, investors that invest in solar and EV charging and batteries, and understand the investment opportunity. And they, you know, we deploy capital, for those projects, and, you know, build them out and provide a really good rate of return.
Okay. Well, I'm really curious to hear where you think ChargeNet Stations is going. I mean, you clearly have some projects in the works over the course of the next year. You know, we just talked about the big Taco Bell win, but what else is on the table as far as achievement and as far as future plans and vision for ChargeNet Stations?
Yeah, well, you know, I have this audacious goal of building the largest fast charging network that no one's ever heard of.
Wait. So did you just say audacious goal? Do you ascribe to BHAGs?
I don't.
All right. So a BHAG is a big, hairy, audacious goal. And It sounds like you've got them.
Yes, we do. And so, you know, by the end of this year, our goal is to have about 80 locations between Southern California and the Bay Area, you know, with our current partner. And next year, you know, our goal is to expand to, you know, nationally, and, you know, build out a national network.
Okay. Well, and I have to ask the question, because when we talk about, you know, you've mentioned carbon footprint and you've mentioned the environmental impact that this can have. So if you were to have, I don't even know if you'll know this number, but, you know, you can give us a ballpark maybe. But if you had 80 stations operating at some kind of significant capacity, I don't know, 100%, whatever, you know, what kind of environmental impact are you hoping to see come out of that?
Well, it's all at a scale. So, you know, we have some projections on, you know, what kind of carbon offset we can expect, you know, over a 10-year period with this.
Yeah, so you just said that much better than I did, because I think that's kind of what I was getting at.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, to kind of put a firm number on it is tough at this point. But,
sure.
You know, once we start getting some hard data, but, you know, we know it'll be impactful. I mean, just to give you a sense of that scale, California has about 31,500 quick serve restaurants in the state.
Yeah.
And if you look at, you know, where these quick serve restaurants are located, they're pretty much at every on-ramp and off-ramp across every major highway across the U.S. So, you know, the opportunity that we're creating to displace greenhouse gases from internal combustion engines, fossil fuel generation, and high carbon intensive, you know, food products where they're consumed at the source, the most, is going to have a sort of like a multiplier effect on the amount of carbon we can.
That exponential impact. Yeah. That is awesome. Oh my God. I'm yes. So excited. well, one of the things that I'm going to switch directions here just a little bit, but one of the things that I like to do, on episodes of Startup Hustle, I like to talk about those actionable things that our listeners can take from the lessons you're so freely and generously sharing with us. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to ask you, you know, if not every person listening is going to, you know, be able to found their own eco-conscious, socially responsible, you know, company. And we wouldn't expect that, but what are some lessons that you would like the entrepreneurs listening at home to know about sustainability and how they can make their organizations more environmentally conscious?
Yeah, I think it's being able to first sort of have an awareness of what that net impact is. And then, you know, being able to quantify it. I think unless you can kind of quantify what that impact is, it makes it difficult to offset it. And yeah. If you can quantify it, you can also quantify the offset. So, you know, I think it's just looking for opportunities. It's being deliberate about, you know, which products or materials you use. And it's also, you know, keeping your eye open to other opportunities as well. You know, there's a lot of investment that has now kind of moved towards, you know, impact to decarbonization. And, you know, like to your point, not everyone can, you know, facilitate doing that kind of, you know, that kind of decarbonization. But there are other areas that I think help support that. And, yeah. You know, I think entrepreneurs, there is a place. I mean, this is an existential crisis. And like, I do believe that entrepreneurs, you know, if we can get creative enough, you know, we can find a problem to anything. We can find a solution to anything, to any yeah. problem. So
that's what we do. That's what entrepreneurs are. We're problem solvers who just happen to attach revenue streams to the actions we take. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, my belief is that you can be a good steward. You can decarbonate, make big cuts to decarbonization. You can also be really profitable too.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love that. And I think that would be my takeaway from this, you know, being socially responsible is not the opposite of profit. Like the two can mm-hmm. coexist quite beautifully. And I love the fact that you're at the forefront of this. And actually, that, you know what, that's my question to you. You know, how does it feel knowing that you are at the forefront of an industry that is very quickly and in a consuming kind of fashion going to change, you know, change transportation and change the face of the way that we move around in our lives? Like, what's that feel like?
It's actually a really humbling feeling. And, you know, for me, you know, our sort of ethos around ChargeNet is stewardship. You know, we yeah. are at the service of, you know, the Mother Nature and the environment, right? And yeah. and that's our purpose is to serve that. But there are also a lot of other really amazing companies You know, even ones that were part of accelerators with some of our competition, you know, that are doing really amazing things to help support, you know, the goals that we have. And we have a common shared goal. And so, you know, as much as, you know, we're fighting to make our own space in the market, you know, the things that we're doing are helping support, you know, our decarbonized future, our electrified future. And so, you know, I think it's a situation where it's not where one person wins or one company wins.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a situation where, you know, a lot of folks win if you can do it right.
Absolutely. Well, and I think it bears mentioning that not only are you creating impact in the here and the now, but the actions that you are taking and the industry that you're driving forward has the opportunity to impact so future generations. You know, the things that we do now are going to have ripple effects that we're probably not even aware of. Could never be aware of all of them, but the fact is you're creating a legacy, you know, with this company that you're building. And so that's super impressive.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I hope, you know, we get to do this for a long time.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot that we need to do to, you know, to try and slow this freight train called climate change coming our way.
Yeah.
Or it's already here. I mean,
oh yeah, for sure. Well, I wanted to mention that, and it takes us to our human question. I'm going to talk about legacy a little bit, but we have come up upon our human question, and I'm going to ask you. Speaking of legacies, what if you had the choice, what would you want written on your tombstone?
Oh wow, that's a really interesting one.
It's very deep. I'm taking us out deep.
maybe something like, here lies a good friend, father, son, and good steward in the environment.
I think
maybe that's what I'd want to say there.
I like it. I really do.
Yeah.
Because it speaks to not only what you do, it speaks to who you are.
Right.
I dig it.
Right.
Yeah. Very cool. All right. Well, that was a fantastic answer for a fantastic person. Tosh, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to share with us. I knew that this was going to be a good one, and it was. So well done. And thank you, sir, for everything that you do for all of us. But more specifically, thank you for taking the time to chat with us today.
Well, thank you, Lauren, and thank you for you know, allowing me to have a voice.
Oh yeah.
You know, and it's really exciting to be able to share, you know, what's passionate to me and, you know, what we're doing to help make the world a better place.
I love it. And I have loved every minute of learning more about you and more about ChargeNet stations. It's been an honor. And speaking of honors, it is absolutely an honor to have as our episode sponsor, Wix. Once again, today's episode of Startup Hustle was sponsored by Wix. If you are an entrepreneur or a founder trying to figure out how to successfully navigate hyper growth, it's a rocket ship. It's really difficult to deal with. And it can be overwhelming. But if you're looking to take control over your company's online presence internally and externally, Wix Enterprise can definitely help. I know so many people who use the Wix Enterprise platform. It provides businesses with an all-in-one solution for all types of growth and business needs. You can create high-performing websites. They are all backed by enterprise-grade security, which I know is a major concern. They offer support, experts to help you level up and to help you manage and scale online. So head over to Wix.com, W-I-X.com, for more information. Friends, we are very, very grateful that you join us week after week and listen to the Startup Hustle podcast, but I also want to point you to Startup Hustle TV. I don't know if y'all knew it, but we have a whole TV channel, a series of webisodes that you can find on YouTube if you search for Startup Hustle. I and the other Startup Hustle hosts Sometimes we look really smart. Sometimes we look really dumb, but you get to follow us on our journeys as entrepreneurs, as we make our way in the world. So definitely check that out. Keep on coming back week after week. It is truly a pleasure to do this with you. And we hope you keep on doing it. We will catch you on the flip side.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.